Blog Talk Radio.
Faceted Gems. Give thanks for our blessings. Enjoy life and loved ones now. Mentor when you can. Silence allows us to hear the inner voice and concentrate on the good. Welcome to Faceted Gems. Blessings. Enjoy life and loved ones now. Mentor when you can. Silence allows us to hear the inner voice and concentrate on the good. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I am so blessed to have my guests this evening. I have wonderful guests that have allowed us to listen to their words of wisdom. Again, I have Guineva and I have Rao. Thank you so much, and we're expecting Tony momentarily. Thank you, Rao and Guineva, for joining me this evening on Faceted Gems.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Diane, for extending the invitation. It's an honor, and I look forward to spending this time with you and your guests.
Well, thank you very much, too, for the opportunity.
And I would also like to thank my producer, Neil Blake. Thank you, Neil, for helping me host this evening, because it's just a wonderful blessing that I've even had this opportunity to do Blog Talk Radio with you. Thank you. So this evening, what I'd like to talk about, since you've all been through so much and we've all had such various experiences, which makes it such a beautiful, beautiful lesson in life, one of the things that I find very, very interesting is that somehow people think that once you reach a certain age, you're either supposed to act old or act your age. I don't know what that means exactly, but the idea that we can always continually learn, it's like a perpetual wheel in my head, seems to be something that seems to be rare with other people. And I don't think I'm an anomaly. I think that there's a lot of people like-minded who also feel, you know, I'm never too old to learn. There's always something more and exciting and challenging for me to experience. And I just wondered, since, you know, the two of you are like-minded, what do you think and how do you address people who think that they, at this point, they should be stagnant? There's nothing else left to do. Do you come across people like that?
Well, yes, you know, Diane, you know, we've had this conversation how many times, but the lessons that I've learned in meeting people that take that position is that I just dismiss it, because I've learned that many times you just cannot feed into or should not feed into someone else's, I don't want to say ignorance, but just their school of thought. Mm-hmm. Like, the older I get, I just could care less what someone's school of thought is that is totally different from mine. I just respect it and I move on. And that's pretty much my position right now.
Mhm. Mhm. Raul, what do you think?
Can you give me the question again?
I've come across people who think that once you reach a certain age, that there's nothing else to learn. I mean, that's it. It's very difficult to convince them otherwise, that life is constantly a learning lesson. And I was just wondering if, number one, if you came across people like that, and number two, if you did, and if you do, how do you address that? How do you, I guess I want to say, motivate people no matter what their age?
Well, that's kind of hard to do, because when you do something like that, you're attacking someone's, like, belief system. Because people believe that, you know, oh, I've learned all that I'm going to learn in life. And that's not even true. Medically, I think they've done studies on it, that the older you get, the more your brain actually it works better when it comes to, like, connecting the different parts and being able to access and address information. And older people that go back to school actually do better than younger people, because they're there because they wanted to go. And not because their parents forced them to do, and it's what they needed to do. But it's hard. It is. It's true. It's one of those things, like, you know, people, oh, you know, I'm too old, and it's a cultural thing almost, because people believe that once you get to a certain age, then you've kind of walked through a portal, and now everything's different. Oh, once I hit 40, oh, things just stopped working. When I was 50, oh, I can't climb upstairs like I used to. So you almost psychologically put yourself into a different mode where things start to affect you differently. And centenarians, like people who live to be 100, they don't know what middle age is to them, because they haven't reached it yet.
That's right.
So it's hard to be able to convince somebody of anything if their belief system is set that's just not how it's going to be. But it just takes a couple of examples. If you can constantly show somebody, he's like, well, you know, you're learning new stuff all the time. Any person that's over 40 that knows how to use a smartphone has learned something.
Because
we didn't grow up with that kind of technology.
Exactly.
So you had to figure some of that stuff out to be able to do some of the things that you do. So there are examples in life all the time. When you stop learning, then you stop growing. And nobody stops growing until you're off the planet. So it's hard to try to get somebody to see that, but it takes maybe pointing out a bunch of examples that, hey, no, remember this, remember that, and then slowly getting them come around, because if somebody's got it dead set in their head that that's just the way it is, it's going to be really hard for them to change that unless you show them solid examples where they're wrong. And so it's no easy task. But, I mean, I kind of agree, with the whole aspect, you can't get caught up in there, that energy or in that and that negativity, because it can be contagious, but so is positivity.
Absolutely. No doubt. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the I wouldn't say how I have recently, you know, well, I'm constantly evolving, but I know that was part of your question earlier, Diane, is that a few weeks ago, I was out and about, and I came across this this building that was always there, but I was unaware that they were holding functions to make a long story short, it is a painting class. And I went online. I spoke to one of the people there, and I went online, got some information as I was instructed to do. And painting was something I always wanted to do as a child in terms of, you know, starting a hobby or creating a hobby or just involving myself in a hobby. And I've decided, you know what? That's something that I'm going to do. There were younger people there, younger, what I mean, about 20, you know, about 20 years old. And I said, but this is something that I always wanted to do. And, you know, at that moment, I may have been the older person in there, but I was all right with that because this is something that I wanted to do. So, again, just not getting caught up in other people's schools of thought, just respecting it, but being comfortable with where you are, regardless of the age. And, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, you have to get to that place in life that you can go ahead and do it and be comfortable with whatever it is. You have to be comfortable with what it is that you want to do and not allow other people's energy, be it positive or what I may perceive as negative, to guide you, if you will.
Right. Right. And I think that's the key. The desire is still there. If the desire is to learn how to swim, if the desire is to learn a musical instrument, there's a TV commercial recently about, you know, you learn at any age. Yeah, you can learn. I think there was a comedian who talked about how, I think it was Phyllis Diller, she learned how to play piano when, you know, she was over 50, I think, or over 60. And, you know, just as an example, if it's something, learn a language, you know, it's just, and some people, they're self-limiting when if that experience and that opportunity is there, then there's no reason why, you don't look foolish. You know, you have to be comfortable with wanting to learn that. I know that some people think, you know, it's a young person's paradise. They can, the world is their oyster. I remember hearing a term like that. The world continues to be your oyster regardless of what age you are. You know, if you're capable and you're willing and, like you said, if you're comfortable in your skin, then after a while, who noticed that you might be the older person in the class? I look at these, I listen to these stories where you find people that are just finally going back to college, okay? They had their children young. They didn't have time to go back to school. They were busy raising their family and seeing to it that their kids, you know, went on to school. Now, you know, you have people that are 80 years old that, I mean, there is one or two that graduate from college. And there's no reason why you can't do that if you're capable and willing. And, you know, it's just wonderful, wonderful encouragement and wonderful stories. And I think those are inspirational. And I think that's part of the reason why when I first started looking into doing this piece on Faceted Gems, it wasn't for someone who was 12 or 14. It was for someone who was maturing into their life and finding themselves and realizing, you know, although this makes money and I can pay the rent doing this, that's not necessarily the only thing I can do. And that was really part of the premise behind Faceted Gems, is knowing that you can dovetail into a lot of different things. And I think part of what we do in each, and you do it as well, both of you do it, is you don't realize how you are an inspiration to other people. Just doing what you do inspires other people. They may not come to you and say anything. Always a living example. You know, both of you, Raoul and Guinevere, you're both living examples to other people. And it may be conscious, it may be subconscious, but it really is admirable because people sometimes will come up to you and say, you know, the nicest things, you don't even realize they're watching you. People watch each other all the time. I don't know if you get that kind of feedback, but people watch people all the time. And that's one of the ways that we develop our own mentorships, don't we? Because I know I had mentioned in another show, the mentors that I had, some of them didn't even know that they were my mentors. I just liked the way they handled themselves.
Wow.
And I think that's where not that we're always on stage, but it's just, you know, just be yourself and be genuine. And that's part of what I was I'm segueing into lessons learned. You know, common sense isn't very common. And when you develop that gut feeling, you know, like someone said to me, well, how do you develop a young person? Well, how do you develop the gut feeling? How does that, you acquire it through experience.
Sure, through trial and error.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people that are afraid to try because they don't want to fail, not realizing that failure is probably one of the better teachers on how to get something right. You get it wrong a couple of times, you know, you'll eventually figure out exactly how it's supposed to work. And too many people are afraid to fail, so they don't make that attempt. And it's, you know, it's you know, you lose out on an opportunity to grow a little bit. And growing isn't easy. You know, it's, sometimes you have to step outside of your comfort zone to be able to get to a place where you'll learn something. I'll tell you this: when I was in college, one of my professors. My philosophy professor was grading one of my papers, and I don't know, my high school did a horrible job with teaching me about like when it came to like prepositional phrases and all like the little grammatical stuff. So he gave me my paper back and a bunch of red little marks on it. And he was telling me, he's like, you know, man, you should take more English classes. And I was like, well, dude, if I'm a bad writer, why would I want to take more English classes? I'm going to still get horrible grades. And he's like, well, no, that's the only way that you get better. And I was like, wow, he's got a point. So I took a critical writing class, I took a creative writing class, I took a poetry class, and, you know, and I go, and my intro to composition class, like my first class, English class I took, I did horrible. I got a D in it, I'm not going to lie to you. When I went to the writing lab, they were like, well, you know, we understand that English isn't just first language. And I was like, no, I was born in this country, it is. And they were like, oh, okay. You really should write better.
That's funny.
And, so I took the class again as a senior, and you know I got an A in it. And in fact, by that point, the teacher was like, "Wow, I'd rewritten a story about something that happened to me when I was 12. I was actually I was in the house when a friend of the family's got a home invasion, and I was part of that. So I retold the story because we had to do an essay project. And I decided to use that. And she was like, well, this is good. I was like, you could submit this to a newspaper and have it put in as an editorial. And that was, I never expected someone to tell me that when, like, you know, 2 years before, they were like, dude, you should just, like, you know, wow, are you sure you have proficiency in the English language? And that's kind of like, you got to put yourself out there and have to take those bumps and bruises if you're going to learn how to do something. So you shouldn't take a failure or a loss as a negative thing, but you should take it as a challenge and a learning experience. And that is something hard to learn. You gotta get bumped a couple of times to be able to learn how to take a bump.
I agree.
Because nobody's born learning how to take a blow like that. It takes a lot of self-esteem to be able to handle those things repetitively to the point where you take it as, you know, I'm not a failure. I'm not really bad. I'm a work in progress. But I'm always working to do something better, and that's the state of mind where learning never stops. Where you realize that, you know, I mean, whatever the proverb is, that a wise man knows that he doesn't know everything.
Right.
That's right.
And those individuals that think they know everything are the ones that lose out the biggest, because, you know, the greatest, because if they don't feel there's anything else left to learn, then there's nothing you can teach me or anybody else. Okay, that's their attitude. And you're absolutely right. When that ties in, exactly what you're saying ties in with that leap of faith when individuals tell me about how they want to try another profession or another career. And having that leap of faith is one of the hardest and most difficult and scariest things to do, you know, because no one wants to fail. No one wants to look like a fool. No one wants to fall on their face. But there's so many lessons to be learned. And I don't know how much respect there is for experience nowadays, but experience is part of what that gut feeling is. And it's an indescribable thing, as you know, but it's that gut feeling that saves you so many times from making the same mistake over and over. And I think each mistake is another stepping stone to part of that learning curve, because as scary as it is, and as many mistakes as you make, you may not realize it, but you learn something. And But it's not always that obvious, because sometimes you're just hurting so much that you don't see it at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's why they say hindsight is 20/20, because when you're in the midst of it, you don't necessarily see it. It's funny, I have an English professor story also, and I always thought that I could write, pretty well. And I had a teacher in college who felt that I should be able to write better. He says, actually, you write really very, very well. And he wanted me to change my major to English.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
said, no, I was pre-med. I was pre-med major. And he said, no, you really need to be an English major. You're a writer, and this mm-hmm. is what you need to do. I was a freshman. And I
mm-hmm.
said, no, no, I was pre-med, and, no, this is what I want to do. Do you know he gave me a C? He
really?
Said, I'm giving you a C because now you're going to have to take the class over. And
wow.
eventually you're going to realize that you need to be a writer.
Wow.
Well,
wow.
His best friend
wow.
was the chairperson of
wow.
the department.
Wow.
So the chairperson of the department and the dean, best friends, there's nothing I could do about it. I ended up taking the class over, of course, with somebody else. Yeah, I did extremely, extremely well. Did I change my major? No.
Wow.
But, it was a lesson learned. And now, I do write, but the point was, at that point in my life, I did not see myself as a writer. I saw myself as something else. And although it smarted, and although I was very hurt, and although it pained me, that was a real serious lesson to learn at, 18? That was a very, very serious lesson to learn. And also the intricacies and the policies and the politics of, this is what it means to have a friend in high places. Okay?
Wow.
Make these students, go through hoops. So did it stop me from wanting to go to college? Did it mean, I'll throw in my books, I don't want to do this anymore? Oh, heck no. I went to grad school. But the point was, he was not at that point going to dissuade me from what I felt in my heart I wanted to do with my life.
Wow. That's a great story.
And that's how you have to persevere. You just have to keep going, keep going. And, every once in a while when I write something and I see it, somewhere, I think of him again and say, the timing, you were right, but the timing wasn't in your time. It was in my time.
That's
okay?
right.
And that's the difference. That's the difference. So we're not
Absolutely.
Always ready all the time when other people think we are. We're the best judge, I think, in some respects, on when we're able to move on. And I think part of that evolution is, and this is really interesting, when you wish the best for somebody but they're not seeing it.
Yeah.
It's hard to convince people sometimes that there's more to them than they see.
Yes, I agree. Well, I too have a story. When I was in undergrad, my psychology professor, I don't recall, but he made this announcement that he never gave a student an A, nobody deserves an A. He just gave this long speech, during our introduction. So I took up the challenge that was going to change with me. So we were scheduled to write a book about a paper, actually, on, I forget the topic, but I wrote about abuse of power in the workplace. And I literally wrote about my former colleagues at work. And because it was so original, and of course, there were no names or anything that was shared, but just their behavior and, just all of their craziness I cited in my paper. It was about a 15-page paper. When he handed me back that paper, not only did I get an A, but he gave me an A++ in big red letters, and he said, this is the most original paper I have ever read, and I still have that paper to this day. I still have that paper because he said, I never give A's to any student. He was arrogant about it. He was proud. I took up the challenge and
that's
said,
a good story.
Well, this year is over before this semester is over, but I said it to myself. I'm going to change that. And I did, and I still have that paper. Still have that paper. So, again, it's being comfortable with what you have, with what you know, and being all right and emphasizing that.
And along with that, it's also, and I can't underscore this how important this is enough, once you're out there, networking and meeting the right people. Because while you may have the talent, if other people don't know about it, then it's just staying in one place. And that's why I encourage people to explore, to meet other people, especially in your field. I know we were talking about English and writing and stuff. When I meet other writers, I'm very inspired. When I join other groups and clubs and stuff, whether it be in knitting or whatever else that I'm interested in, it's a new charge of energy. I feel invigorated when I meet people that have like interests and have different interests, because I think that that's where some of that nice blend and mix that makes whatever you create yours so unique comes from.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think you're right, when you feel comfortable with yourself. But now, every once in a while, you come across someone who's not comfortable, and you need to encourage them, and you need to foster them, and sometimes taking them under their wing can do such a great deal of service. So I had an intern. I've had several interns through the years, and I have one intern, and she asked me to write a recommendation for her because she wants to go on to, I have a few that want to go on to grad school and one that wants to be an ambassador somewhere. And she was just so pleased that I said yes. And I said, of course I would say yes and write a recommendation. So I wrote the recommendation, and she recently emailed me back and she said, what you wrote made me want to cry. I guess, not to pat myself on the back, of course, but I said, well, you deserve it. She did not realize what a great contribution she made to an assignment that we worked on together with a lot of different people from a lot of different areas, all different kinds of ranks and everything else, personalities, egos, everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And she was able to get through that, this is a young woman, seamlessly. And I said, I wrote it back. I said, well, you deserved it. And this is a very, very, very nice thing when you see someone who can still be humble, be great and humble. And I know this person is going to achieve many things. What's difficult is when people are very verbose and full of themselves and don't know. You need to be humble. Roll that back a little bit, okay?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, rope it in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I always personally feel encouraged when I come across a young person who feels, wow, there's still so much I want to learn. Their bright face, they want to realize what everybody else knows and wants to make it part of their own. And I think there are pockets of people out there that need that. I want them to be able to find that. And I don't know, where does a person go when they want to find that kind of encouragement?
The problem is that you have to seek it out yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side about, like, you know, the story of your intern is that you have to understand how many different places she's probably been at, teachers that she's worked with, that haven't given her that encouragement.
Okay.
I've worked with people, you know, like pretty much at every agency that I've ever been in, or any job that I've ever worked, there was always, like, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've run across a supervisor who actually went out of their way to make sure their workers felt appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
Who would when someone did a really good job, would let them know that they did a really good job. Everybody's really good at telling you when you messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll tell you that I was working for an agency one time. Actually, I wasn't working for them. I was working in their space. I was doing my community stuff out of their office. And I would often stop and make sure to note, like, when the office manager was doing a really good job or handled something when I was out for me. I was like, wow, you know, I was like, you know, Marissa, you're doing a really good job. I just wanted to let you know that. And it would, somebody, people would tell me that sometimes when I would do that, her supervisor would roll her eyes.
Oh, my goodness.
Because she never went out of her way to make sure that she told her staff when they did something, like, you know, mm-hmm. when they did some extraordinary or did something well. So they weren't, you know, people aren't used to getting praised. There's not a lot of positive reinforcement out there.
Right.
So oftentimes to get to that point where you learn that about knowing how to improve yourself or understanding that feeling you get when you're, like, trying to learn something, like, new or challenge yourself, you kind of have to almost come across it yourself because there aren't too many people out there. Like, you know, like, wow, you know, you would be really good if you tried that or your skill set would be. Have you ever tried, like, thinking about trying to do and getting somebody to expand themselves past what they think their parameters are or what their comfort? And, again, I guess it comes back to stepping out of their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's really good at doing one particular thing, they want to stick to that because they know that that's the one thing that they can do. Nobody can tell them anything else about it. You know, they're experts there. And sometimes it takes an outside eye to be able to see, like, wow, you know what, man, you might be really good if you tried this.
That's true.
It might be a little bit outside of their zone. And you know and you can see that they have the potential to be able to blow up if they took that step. But it takes a lot for somebody to be able to say, yeah, you know what, I'm going to give that a try and step away from something that they're comfortable with, that they know nobody can piece away their self-esteem by not giving them praise for it.
Exactly.
So I've had the same situation where I wrote a recommendation for somebody who used to work for me, and it's the same deal. You know, she told me, it brought her to tears. She never realized that, you know, that she was, like, you know, she was that good at what she did. And I was like, no, I tell you all the time. But I would tell her. She wouldn't get it from everybody else.
Right.
So it's you know, sometimes it's pretty eye-opening. Like, when somebody gives me praise, I don't even know how to accept it sometimes.
Right.
You know? Like, when you were talking earlier about how, like, you know, Guinevere and myself and how we're admired. And I'm thinking about times where someone has come up to me and told me that, like, out of the blue. And I was like, that they really admired my discipline, and I was like, well, you know, thank you. Sometimes I don't even know how to take that because it's not what I shoot for, and it's not often that I get it. Even when you were talking about it, I was like, wow, okay, I guess she's right. But I don't, you know.
I don't give praise often, so you know.
I'll tell you, and even when I was, like, you know, maybe like 10 years ago when I was kind of starting doing the community organizing, the supervisor I had, the guy that was running the agency, he was one of those guys that would go out of his way to make sure if you were doing a really good job, he'd let you know that you were doing it. So I'm doing a presentation, like, you know, about some stuff that was going on, about some projects I'm working on. And then he, like, stopped in the middle of it to, like, you know, man, you know, I just want to let you know that, you know, Raul's doing a really good job when it comes to this. He was able to break some ground and do some stuff. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, okay, and I just pick up from where I left off. And he even stops me again. He's like, look, man, this guy doesn't even know how to take a compliment. And they didn't. I felt awkward. I was like, I didn't know exactly how to handle it. I wasn't used to that.
Right.
Wow.
So it's like, so I go out of my way to make sure that if I see somebody doing a really good job, to pull them aside and say, you know what? You know, I really appreciate the work that you do. Because the people around me make my job easier. And I like people to understand that. And when I'm doing community work, the people in the community that are my eyes and ears and help spread my word and you know, are the people that do some of that heavy lifting for me, when I'm organizing projects, I'm not doing all the work, I'm just organizing them. I let them know that, you know, man, I really couldn't do this without you.
And you get so much more out of, you know, they
end up doing so much more and so much better. Now there's a sense of appreciation that, wow, this is actually adding to my self-worth, you know. And we don't realize how powerful social capital can be. When you give somebody some praise, that helps them want to get to the next level and move past their comfort zone. When they see what we do and we let them know, it's like, it's not unattainable. You know, we weren't, you know, born with, like, gifts that make us, you know, some of these things are easily are developed. Not everybody... Everybody doesn't, you know, not every A student didn't have to study to get his A. Sometimes they have to study extra to be able to get that. And they put in the time and the extra hours. So it's not like, boom, you're a genius and you don't ever have to pick up a book. You pick up a book and then you learn how to get the information faster, so you have to rework smarter. And it just looks like you're not doing anything, but you're actually putting in the time.
Well, I was fortunate enough to work with one genius, because you are listening to Faceted Gems on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul, and the genius that I worked with is Neil Blake, because he allowed me to have this show. He kept pushing me and pushing me, quite honestly.
Wow.
And he said, Diane, you can do it any platform you want. Just go ahead and do it. And he had asked me for years to do this, and I was like, no, I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can do it. And now I'm so blessed that he encouraged me and believed in me and said, sure, you can do this. And so, you know, again, it's such a beautiful, beautiful thing to have someone in your corner who believes you can do this, anything. And I think that, you know, you hit it really on the head, Raul, when you said, you know, about compliments, because most of us, we're not, you know, we just do what we got to do, and we just do it. We don't think that there's any kind of praise attached to it. We do it because we love it or whatever it might be. But I find that on occasion I've had to pull people's coat and say, instead of being ready to always be negative and tell a person when they've done something wrong, why is it that you can't be just as tenacious about praising someone? And I remember saying that to a couple of supervisors, and they were like, what? And I was like, yeah. And they said, you know, we noticed when you come around, our staff just like, anything I ask, they'll do it for me. They'll do it for me. When you beat people up all the time just because you happen to make maybe three times their salary, what makes you think they're going to run and jump and stop everything they're doing to help you? Really? Do you really think that's how this works? Instead, treat everybody with respect.
In their minds,
That's right. But a simple thing, and it's not that simple, to treat people with respect is, you know, you would think that would be common sense, but it's not. And that's where you've got to change. You know, we know that you don't beat up people. We know that you should respect and could respect. But, you know, I've also learned not to put the word should in my vocabulary unless I'm talking about myself. Diane should do this. Diane needs to, I need to do blah, blah, blah. I should do da, da, da. I do not use the word should when it comes to anybody else. Why? Because I'm a work in progress, and I'm going to concentrate on myself. And as I do, hopefully it will be seen by others to be, oh, maybe that's the way, you know, we could operate. But I do not no longer use the word should in relation to anybody else. And it took me a while to figure that out. I had an epiphany, and it was like, wait a minute, why am I getting upset about expectations I have of other people? I get disappointed when that happens. Am I right or wrong? So this way is how Diane should operate. And if and that headset is, it helps me understand that, well, what do I bring to the table that makes them act that way? Maybe there is something that I do that makes the person act that way. Then that means, what do I have control of? Me. That's what I need to work on then. And I think that's part of that. Being complimentary, being genuine when you compliment. Because if it's in you know, if you're not being sincere about it, then that's a waste. That's you've undermined the whole thing. But if you genuinely see someone doing something, and it doesn't have to be, you know, they sign their signature bigger and better than anybody else. It's the little person. It's the person who doesn't make the gobs of money. It's the person who's still that important feature.
Yeah.
That important, provides that important service that, guess what, that's not going anywhere unless this person does X, Y, and Z. That's the person you have to always remember. Because at one point, whether you like it or not, you were that little person. You may have forgotten that, but at some point, you were once that person. And little is all I mean by, you don't think their job is all that significant, when damn it, it really is.
That's right.
And that's where I think people sometimes lose sight. And I think that when we talk about students and we talk about our own student experiences, this is what inspires people, because we were all once students. We all went through professors that were great and professors
we
that weren't.
But we're still students, you know? And this is
what people need to understand. And part of that evolution is being able to sit back, look at this and say, okay, maybe I could have handled that a little better.
Yeah.
Maybe I could have, you know, there's no reason not to take that self-assessment.
Sure.
And sometimes you don't always like what you see in the self-assessment, you know.
That's true.
I know that's true of me. So how do I work on that? I try to change up some of that so that I can remain even keeled and still get what I want and make everybody copacetic and happy and be at peace. I mean, prayer does a lot for me, but, you know, everybody else has their own thing. You know, for some it's reading, it's writing, it's whatever it is. But I think that it's just part of the human condition that we want to be happy. We want to feel fulfilled. And we'd like to help other people in that capacity. And I think that's what we really can do for each other. Because let's face it, our time here is very short.
Yes, that's true.
But
you know what it is? Everybody's fighting against there's an initial human condition in every person that it's kind of a way that you deal with the cognitive dissonance that your life brings to you is that, you know, no matter what you're going through, there's a part of you that tells yourself, well, you know, this is the best I can do and everything's okay. Because there are people that are dealing with, you know, situations that are just, you know, that I can't imagine.
Right.
That can easily see that their lives are in total disarray.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't get up in the morning and say, man, my life is just horrible. I don't know how I'm going to do this another day.
Mm-hmm.
They get up and they just do it.
Yeah, that's right.
And so because you have to. You almost have to, like, you know, fool yourself into thinking that this is okay. And it normalizes whatever hell you're going through. Because you can't consciously admit that my life is just a total wreck and still be able to live it. Because, like you say, we want to be happy. We generally want to be fulfilled.
Yeah.
When we find ourselves in situations that we sometimes deem out of our control, to stabilize your own sanity, you kind of convince yourself, well, this is just the way it is, and it's not going to get any better or it's not going to get any worse. It's just what it is, what I'm dealing with right now.
Right.
And then that puts people in a situation where they hope that something's going to happen.
Right.
And hope is great because hope, there's no action without hope.
That's right.
But if there's hope without action, then you're in a holding pattern.
Right.
You're waiting for something else, some outside force to be able to come in and change the circumstances that'll make your life better. And nobody's coming to save us.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be something that's, like you say, the only person that you have any control over is you.
Right.
And a lot of people don't believe that. And you know, so we don't look ourselves as holistic. We don't look ourselves as whole human beings. Because if we did, we'd treat each other a whole lot better.
Absolutely.
You know.
I agree.
I certainly concur. I concur.
When we take that kind of ownership, then no one feels lost. You know, it's because we all want to help. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about someone who, they have a lot of things going on in their life. You know, between health issues and family issues and all different kinds of things. But the one thing that this person says, you know, that what has been their life preserver is the fact that they know they do a certain thing very well. And so whether it be, you know, cooking or sewing or whatever it is, this is where they get their joy. And it's sort of it keeps them whole. It's their foundation. It's like their core. And they know no matter what else is going on, they can dish up a great meal for whoever. Even though that doesn't take away the illness, that doesn't take away the financial problems, that doesn't take away the other stuff that's going on. But they know that they do this. And holding on to that like a buoy, you know, in the sea. Everything around them is rocking and rolling and the seas are, you know, everything is washing on them. But they still feel that center, that core. And I think that that's where sometimes we're very, very inspirational as well, because those moments when you see that skill and that talent that you have, that you know what, no matter what happens, I know I'm good at this. That affirmation, or I know I can do this, or I know I can develop this, or I know I've got a headset for this, or that's a very positive, strengthening headset. And that gets through people through a lot of misery and a lot of torture and a lot of, you know, just really bad situations. And they'll look at it later in hindsight and say, how did I get through that?
Yes.
That's inspirational to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, absolutely. One of the issues that has always been an undercurrent in the program, Faceted Gems, has been not only taking that leap of faith, but believing in yourself, but also, and this is part of what we've been saying, those naysayers and keeping the naysayers at bay, the ones that say, you know, you can't do this. You can never, you got to be kidding. I mean, and sometimes with some of my guests, it's come from their, you know, immediate family. And their immediate family has not been very supportive. And they said, look, you do something well right now. Look, you just leave it alone. I mean, you must be crazy. You just, you know.
Yeah.
But they got to that point, and whatever it was they were doing, when they said, you know what, enough is enough. I can't take it anymore. And I always go back to my guest, Debbie, who said one day, and she's an accountant. She was an accountant, and she didn't like her job. And she always enjoyed writing. And she said, you know, one day she just couldn't take it. I don't know what happened in the office, but she said, I have had enough. I can't do this anymore. And, you know I can do something else. And now, you know, she is a writer now and everything, but she had to make that decision because whatever it was, the straw, you know, the straw was hit the camel's back, whatever, it was the last straw, and that was it. That was it, whatever happened. It was a blessing. Whatever it was that happened, you know, whatever it was, because she didn't end up in the jail system, but whatever it was, she knew, I better get out of here because I've had enough of these coworkers or whatever it was.
Know about that.
And so she had enough, but you know, and she said this on the air, you know, her family wasn't necessarily like, is there something wrong with you? You can't do this. But she knew she could write, and she knew that's what she wanted to do. And in between all that, she was selling soap, and she was selling this. She was doing all kinds of things in between to get towards her dream, her dream. And, I mean, you know, now she's got two books published. It looks like she's doing a screenplay in California. I mean, she's barely on the ground now. She's doing fantastic. I can't keep track of her.
Yeah.
But I say that to say she had to go through it and say, you know what, one of the things, and it was just, I'll never forget, she said this on the air. She said, you know, one of the reasons that I knew I could do this is because her epiphany was, well, when I get to the pearly gates and God says to me, I'm paraphrasing, and God says to me, I gave you this gift to write. Why didn't you use it? She said, I didn't know what I was going to say to him.
That's right.
I don't know. Wow. What was I going to say? She said, what excuse can I give as to why I didn't use the gift he gave me?
That's right.
And she said, I can't get there like this. I have to at least try and use the gift. And I think that's one of the ways that we, I think, encourage people, helping them identify these gifts, like you said before, Ralph, these gifts that people have, complimenting people. Simple thing like a compliment goes a long way. You're so right. And then letting them think on their own about whether or not they want to pursue that. There's nothing wrong with that. I wish I heard about it more. But maybe it's going on. Maybe this show is inspirational. Maybe, you know, maybe it makes people think a little bit about those inner feelings and inner yearnings they have to try something else. I'm not saying quit your job tomorrow and just, you know, I don't have a Jennifer convertible. Yeah. You're not coming here. But I'm just saying, you know, give it some thought.
absolutely.
And I think that's a good thing, though. But I think that's a good thing. Or at least have the dialogue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you have, like, I mean, like, going to your point that her family wasn't supportive, it's not really that they weren't supportive, because they want her to be safe. They want her to be secure. And they know that safe and secure means you got a job with benefits, and why rock the boat?
That's right.
Because,
they don't want you to take a chance that you're going to fall on your face, and now what are you going to do? You pick the worst economy, time in the economy, and decide, I don't need my job anymore.
That's right.
And I've had enough. And I was like, because all they know, all our parents knew was like, look, just get a job, get some benefits, get a pension, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
if you live long enough, you get your pension, you find another job, you work 20 years there, and then you can live off two pensions.
Right.
That's what they know. We don't live in that economy anymore.
That's right.
We don't live in that where, you know, just go out there and lift yourself up with your bootstraps. Those jobs aren't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have, like, you know, if you don't get the level of education that you need to be able to make yourself marketable, or you become an entrepreneur and figure out how to do this outside and start your own business and be your own person, you're not going to get rich. There's no job that's going to make you rich when you're working all the time.
Right.
Because you're always working for somebody. And when you stop working, if you haven't figured out how to make capitalism work with you for you, because the definition of capitalism means I am not working with an income. I'm living off the capital of my investments.
Right.
And I don't know how many of us are in a position where we can say that we're taking advantage of the capitalist society that we live in. Because there is a passive income. A lot of us don't live off passive income. No. We're working a grind with the hope that, you know, wow, I'm going to be really good at this. So when someone's like, you know what, I can't take this anymore, and they're an accountant, they've put in the years, they've worked themselves up, your family's not going to be like, now's the time. Now wasn't the time to do this. You should have done this 15 years ago when you just started.
Right.
Yeah, you know, now you would have been a great writer. I'm like, really want to do that now? And it's not so much as they're not being supportive. It's like they don't want to see you fail.
But you know what's also great about that is that now, because she has that background as a cap, she can do her books. She knows what's going on.
Yeah, and she can do her own taxes.
She can use her own tax. She can do everything, and that's wonderful. We had another guest who, she was working with women in Africa who make their own little cottage industry stuff that she was selling here in the States, and it was something that she needed to get bottles for. And she says, you know. And now this is a woman who's a surgeon, okay? And she says, I know nothing about bottles. I know nothing about little glass bottles, containers, or anything else. And she said, you know what? It's okay to say you don't know everything, okay? It's all right to say you don't know everything. Admit that you don't know everything. And she said, sure enough, I went out and I found somebody who, guess what? This guy is an expert in bottles, all kinds of bottles, little bottles. And she said, guess what? That's the person we use. She said, because no one says you have to be an expert in every single thing that you want to do. Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
It means you do your homework, you seek them out, and look, she has another connection. And that's how you do it. And you don't have to be afraid of saying, I don't know something.
Mm-hmm.
Go
that's
out
right.
and find out the expert that does.
Absolutely.
I mean, the president of the United States doesn't know everything. He has a bunch of advisors that are telling him, look, we should do this.
Right.
This is how we should handle that. And
that's right.
He picks
and that's
his
the most powerful job in the world. Right.
Yeah,
right.
And he doesn't know it all.
Exactly.
And I think being able to admit it, because some people don't even want to admit it, and that's a step in self-growth as well, to be able to say, I don't know everything. I need to learn something from someone else. I can gain knowledge from someone else's experience. Some people can't humble themselves like that and admit that. And I think that's a key trait that one can acquire when you really want to get something going. I mean, it's important for us to be able to say, I can learn from you. We're not enemies. We can work in concert with each other. It's a win-win when we do that. There may be something I know you don't know. We can share. And I think a lot of that, the networking, the sharing, thank God we have the internet, we have clubs, we have groups, we have all kinds of things, whether it be hobbies or whatever, that sometimes open us up pleasantly to different things. I know I did I've been volunteering at a particular hospital, and out of that, I've met so many wonderful people with such diverse interests that every once in a while I come across somebody who has similar interests to me. And then guess what? That ping-pongs me into another realm of people and then another realm of people. And you just keep, you know, I'm just watching this go on and on and on. And that's from volunteering. And I just wanted to volunteer, not to think that I was, I mean, I knew I was going to meet wonderful people, but you start talking to people, talking about your interests, about your concerns, about, you know, what you want to do. And now this person has opened me up to, like, six other people, and then now I'm meeting these other people. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful way to network and just to have friends and to do things that you enjoy. So I think that, you know, I'm blessed because I've had you in my life. And who knew that I would have a radio program and that you'd be on it. I knew. Because I selected you. That's what I get to do. But that's a blessing. And you know, and having this dialogue and really, quite frankly, getting to know both of you more than I did before.
Well, thank you.
Know, because there were aspects about your lives that I didn't know before. You know, and that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I thank you for that. And that's a blessing because it gives me an opportunity to say, wow, I feel closer to both of you.
Wow,
I felt close to you before, otherwise I wouldn't have had you on my show. But I'm just saying it's a different level of it now. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Well, it has certainly been an honor, and I am certainly taking with me some faceted gems. you know, it was just really delightful. So as I was being quiet, I was just absorbing the conversation. But it's been a delight, and, of course, you know, it's always a delight, Diane, to communicate with you, as we really don't have you know, a lot of time to do that as we used to, but it was just great. This was just really a great program, and I thank your other guest. Is this Ralph, right? Tony
Ralph.
Never came on, right?
No, I don't know. Okay. He probably is working so late that he just, but, you know, but next time.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's all good, but thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, it's not often that somebody asks me to just, like, sit there and just talk about what I think for, you know, just openly. I was having a conversation with my intern today because we were talking about public speaking. And I told her, I was like, yeah, you know, because she's seen me do, like, you know, presentations. She's seen me, like, just get up in front of a crowd and just, like, work the room. And I was like, that took a lot of time to figure out how to do. I was like, I've given a lot of bad speeches. And it took me doing those bad speeches to learn how to do it right. She's like, really? Yeah, you have to go out there and you got to fail a couple of times to understand how important it is. And she was saying the same thing because she's a student for human services. And she says that her instructor says it all the time. And he makes it, like, he really brings the point home. Because, like, you really don't learn, you know, you really don't start learning about your mistakes until, like, your first client kills themselves. And I was like, wow. That's like prophetic, and just like, wow. Man. And she's like, you know, and I don't know if it's a really good analogy. She's like, no, but not for nothing. That brings it home.
Absolutely.
Because you don't understand until you've actually failed, then you realize, wow,
that's it.
It's what I'm doing is really important, and it affects, like, you know, certain people, and it'll even affect how you handle something like that.
And Toastmasters can't do everything for you when you want to give a speech, because if it's not genuine, if it's not from the heart, then people know that. They know that. They sense it. They sense it. And that's why, and that's why it's so important that I have you two on, because I know how genuine and how much I genuinely love both of you. So
thank you
again,
likewise.
Raul.
Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this evening. Thank you. This is Fascinating Gems. Lead, love, everyone. Empower, assist when you can, dream and believe in the positive energies. And I've been so blessed to have Geneva and Raoul on. And thank you, Neil, again. And